broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web. You're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Powell to the People, live on the radio. Wayne Powell here at the beach, and we have a special guest today. We have Hermosa Beach Mayor Dean Francois. Welcome, Dean.
Well, thank you. I didn't know I was special.
You are always special, especially special to the residents of Hermosa Beach. Well, since we're friends, I can refer to your Hermosa Beach mayor as Dean. So, again, welcome. I want to give a little brief background on Dean. It's very impressive. He's a distinguished public servant and a former federal budget manager with a career spanning multiple roles in the federal government, including auditing, investigating government programs. We'd need a lot of that nowadays. Notably, he served as a welfare fraud investigator and defense contract administrator. Dean has been dedicated to enhancing the quality of life in the South Bay, particularly in Hermosa Beach. His efforts have focused on controlling development, preserving the city's unique character, protecting its environment, and improving street safety for residents and cyclists. As a Sierra Club leader, he successfully prevented the construction of an oversized hotel in Manhattan Beach, eliminated storm drain pollution from beaches, and expanded bike paths along the beaches and streets. Dean volunteers with various organizations, including the Chamber of Commerce, city commissions, the American Red Cross, and the Community Emergency Response Team. I love that one. His interest in politics led him to intern on Capitol Hill for the Speaker of the House. The attack on the U.S. Capitol motivated him to run for city council. As mayor of Hermosa Beach, Dean has made significant strides in promoting transparency, community engagement, and inclusive decision-making. Some of his notable achievements include establishing town hall forums, and forming a Civic Facilities Project Advisory Group to engage residents in addressing aging facilities. Yeah, there's a lot of aging facilities and infrastructure, and we're going to talk about that real shortly. Dean also represents the South Bay Council of Governments on the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission and was recently appointed to the Los Angeles County Library Commission. He has a Bachelor's of Science degree in Political Science and Public Administration from Northeastern University. Well, all right, so let's get started. There's been all kinds of talk in the papers about having a new Hermosa Beach City Hall and perhaps Civic Center. And I know now with the election of Michael Keegan on the City Council, the majority has kind of shifted a bit. Talk about that, Dean.
Well, yeah, it's been an interesting little road we've gone down. Previous city councils have really kicked the can down the road, and we have been delinquent in maintenance of our facilities, and especially our city hall. I kind of think it's a really nice retro-looking 60s style city hall, and it represents what Hermosa is, a small town atmosphere. And so I've always been with the notion of let's renovate the thing. We don't need to build something new with major construction, most likely on the other side of Valley. But when we formed, we originally formed the facilities panel, the majority of the council, three of them, wanted to consider all options, including a new city hall. And, of course, the financing of anything is going to be difficult, but, you know, they're talking about public-private partnerships and everything else. But with the election of Michael Keegan, that dynamic shifted. He definitely had it on his platform when he ran for office that he was not in favor of a new city hall. And with that, we have now changed the direction of this facility advisory committee, and they're going to consider all options. But not a new city hall. We think we can renovate what we have, deal with our existing land that we have down there where city hall, library, and police and fire are, and not deal with a complete major construction up above Valley by the community center. So that is the new direction we've taken. It is a major shift. Didn't go without, you know, community criticism on it, but I think it's a good decision to narrow down and focus more on what it is we need to do. I think the sooner we can go ahead and renovate and not let our place deteriorate any further, the better off the city and the residents are going to be.
I know in Manhattan Beach, you know, in the 8 years I was on city council and two terms as mayor, we kept discussing, you know, our city hall. And, you know, the City Hall and Civic Center is vintage 1960s. I actually like the look, just like how you like Hermosa Beach. But there were some that said, no, let's just, you know, demolish it and build a brand spanking new facility. And, you know, Manhattan Beach is rich and, you know, it's worthy of a new City Hall. And to this day, nothing has happened. You know, we even talked about remodeling, and people said, oh, no, don't waste any money remodeling the Civic Center or City Hall. There's all kinds of other facilities that we really need, like a new aquatic center, you know, a swimming pool. And so that comes up, you know, very frequently. And I agree with you. I like, you know, the Hermosa City Hall, and I've been there quite a bit. And for those of you that are interested, the Hermosa City Council meets on the second and fourth Tuesdays, and the address is 1315 Valley Drive. It's right next to the library on Pier Avenue. Well, you know, I think, Dean, you should build a new City Hall on the end of the Hermosa Pier, because there's nothing on the end of the Hermosa Pier, and it just kind of looks like it goes nowhere.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a quarter-mile-long pier. It's a long pier, you know. I'll tell you, I've swum that pier-to-pier swimming race, and they say it's 2 miles long, but by the time you swim around that quarter-mile pier, you're practically swimming 2.5 miles, you know. But, okay, you want something
did that
on the end of the pier. That's fine, sure.
I did that pier-to-pier swim once, foolishly, and then most recently I did the polar bear swim that, you know, the Dodgers had at the Manhattan Beach Pier. But one of the things that I like about your platform is, and I agree totally, and again, one of the similar issues we have in Manhattan Beach, but it's density, and, you know, building, well, for lack of a better word, McMansions or McMansionization. And, of course, now with the new state law regarding, you know, granny units or accessory dwelling units, now we lose a bit of ability as far as zoning codes and, you know, having height restrictions and setbacks. Talk about how that's affecting Hermosa Beach.
Well, it's interesting. I don't think we've had much of effect on it right now, the fact that everyone can just split their properties up overnight and do that. the housing element as a whole is something that all of our cities have had to deal with, and grudgingly we get forced into putting all these incentives in place for accessory dwelling units or more dense housing or attempt to bring the supply up so that hopefully rents will go down. And we successfully got ours passed finally, but we really involved the community quite a bit. It's something that we should be proud of here in Hermosa Beach, because we got the community involved and engaged, and were able to seek out property owners willing to designate their pieces of property to go on our housing element to make it comply. And we have tried to push back from the state and not really coalesce to everything that they want or go beyond what they want. I mean, just an example, recently we added on language regarding accessory dwelling units because the state forced us to do it. But we, in the end, decided not to allow anything higher than the height limit, which is what the state wanted us to do, but we weren't required to. And this was another controversial split decision on the council, but we were able to prevail in keeping, you know, keep it 2 feet lower than what it otherwise would have been. And all that creeping just creates more and more building heights and density and everything that just builds up the city and more and turns it into something that it isn't. We are very dense in Hermosa, though. We're much denser than Manhattan. We are dense, but we still have a quaint look to us, you know.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting. You talk about McMansions, but like a McMansion isn't necessarily dense. It's a large mansion you build, and it's a, you know, one family unit. And so we do have density, and we don't have a lot of mansions. So it's interesting, you know.
Well, I remember one year, I think it was my second term as mayor, where the regional agency that gets its directives from the state, they were telling us that we had to build 795 new dwellings, you know, new housing units. And it's like, wait a minute, where are we going to put it? You know, they kind of had like a one-size-fits-all, but like for cities, especially like Hermosa Beach and Manhattan Beach, you know, we're different from other cities where the lot sizes are much larger and less dense. And, of course, there's more parking as well. That's the other thing. With more density, it creates more parking challenges.
Yeah.
Well, one thing also I like about you as mayor is you welcome and, in fact, encourage inclusive and participatory government, and you have, you know, town hall meetings. Talk about that.
Yeah, I did. I started up town hall meetings probably about 4 or 5 months ago as mayor. I'll probably continue them even after when I'm on the council and no longer mayor. But I think it's important because people are so restricted with their time limits to speak at council meetings, and they feel they don't have a say in everything and have a say-so. And it allows just group participatory, no time constraints, just an informal process where people are able to voice their concerns. And I think it's great. It really opens things up and allows it. But, you know, that's only one part of what we try to do when we say encourage engagement and listen to everyone. Previous city councils have been almost not just reluctant to listen to people, but after people are done speaking, members of the body would try to create a dialogue when there isn't one. There's no dialogue. Once you're done speaking, the meeting's over, and then the council deliberates, and then they go in and they criticize comments from the public, but it's not really a good way to do it, because the public, you're not able to carry on a conversation with a member of the public at a council meeting, you know. You can't, otherwise we'd never get anything done. So I think we've made strides in cutting down in that type of format, and just taking what people say for what it's worth, not criticizing their motivations or, you know, if people say facts are wrong, you know, everyone has a different viewpoint on what facts are correct and wrong, but move ahead, move on, and listen to what people say, even if we disagree with them, even if we do not like them. You know, there's certain people that every city has them. They come down and they just try to stir things up. And that's okay. That's freedom of speech. That's part of the public process. But, you know, it's nicer if we have a better professional attitude with our meetings, carry them professionally, and then move on and also deliberate. Because when I was elected, I and another council member were elected, and we were two new people with three incumbents. And that shifted that dynamic around quite a bit, because there is now more dialogue. And many times there's no solid block of three that carry over two. It's always different people have different viewpoints, and, you know, hopefully we come to the best decisions overall for our city. So it's a healthy environment I think we've created.
Right. And for our listening audience, when you have five council members, all it takes is three votes, a simple majority, either to get something done or, conversely, to prevent something that maybe is not necessarily in the best interest of residents, but in order to prevent that from happening. The one thing I know from my personal experience was I always encouraged public comment, but sometimes people don't like to come to City Hall, or, you know, it's televised and they don't like, you know, being in public. They'd rather have an informal forum. And just like you, I started the Mayor's Town Hall Forum. And I got to tell you, we got so much great input. You know, so often city staff makes recommendations, and on occasion sometimes they have their own agenda. But when you hear from the public, it's things that might have otherwise been overlooked. And also, like you said, the dynamic changes depending on who's on the council. I remember my first term, I had council members that basically went out of their way to discourage public comment, and they put an unreasonable limit on the time you could speak. And then when I was reelected and then they were termed out, then we changed that. And I've been to a number of, you know, your Hermosa City Council meetings, and I like the way you run the meetings, and, you know, everything is always above board and professional.
Well, we try to do that. You know, it's interesting. The mayor circulates every 9.5 months, so every 9.5 months you are going to have a different person running the meetings. And, of course, a lot makes how you run a meeting, because they can go extremely late into the night, and sometimes they have to, because we just have to continue to deliberate things until we get them resolved. But, you know, there's ways to move them on and move them ahead and move them quicker to facilitate the debate. So, you know, that's one of the big challenges at running meetings as a mayor.
You have one of my favorite events coming up in Hermosa Beach. March 15th is the annual St. Patrick's Day Parade. I miss the days when I rode in the car, you know, being a city elected dignitary. But ever since then, I'm in the bike brigade, and I ride my bike. And so what I'm going to do this year is I'm going to ride up to your car as the parade's going on and shake hands. No, just kidding.
Okay, you might have to go up to the front. I don't know. I think we're in the front.
Yeah, that's right. So I'd have to ride a little bit a ways up. Well, I remember one year. It was the year after I was termed out, and they put the bike brigade right behind the car that, you know, the cars that the City of Manhattan Beach dignitaries were in. So I was riding right behind them, and I kind of rode up a little and waved. And I remember Rick, when he was announcing, said, "There's the city council, and look what we have, former mayor on his bike." And it was cool. One council member didn't necessarily like that. Well, so speaking about events, there's one event that I also like, but I'm a little bit disappointed as of, was it last year or the year before, when a change was made, and that's the Fiesta Hermosa. You know, this year it's on May 24. It used to be, which is Memorial Day. It used to always be every Memorial Day and Labor Day. But then, and I know this is more of a chamber event than it is a city event, although the city, I think, subsidizes partially. But there's no more Labor Day Fiesta Hermosa. Talk about that.
Well, that was a Chamber of Commerce decision. I believe they had it 1 year when a heat wave was going on, and they didn't do well because it's so darn hot. That can happen sometimes in September. I guess we have less heat waves in May than we do in September, but, you know, and then there were just, it takes a lot to organize people, vendors, volunteers. It's a lot the chamber does, and I guess they just felt that they weren't making enough for the effort they put into it. So they reduced it to one per year. And, you know, there's always people that don't like it. There are critics of it. But when you don't have it, now people are complaining, hey, how come it's not back, you know? So it's hard to say what the future will hold. But, you know, it's basically a chamber decision to figure out whether it's worth it for them to have it. And I mean, it'd be nice to have it come back, but we certainly want them to be able to make some money so that they can subsidize other events. Because basically, the money they make for that pays for, like, the St. Paddy's Day Parade is not really meant to make money. They lose a little money on it every year. So, one of those things.
Yeah. So. Well, I remember 1 year, it was going to be the last year that I was in my term that I was going to be able to participate. Actually, it was after my term. And unfortunately, then COVID hit. And they actually canceled the parade, and I was totally bummed about that. Anyway, yeah. On that note, we have to take a commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Powell to the People on the Healthy Life Radio Network.
It's Powell to the People.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best Earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now. So come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 1-800-849-8978. That's 1-800-849-8978.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Love with Food delivers healthy, natural, organic, or gluten-free snacks every month right to your door. Whether you want a home or business box, Love with Food has got you covered. Membership starts at $9.99 a month. Imagine junk-free food delivered every month. And the best thing is that for every box you buy, Love with Food donates to food banks in America. To find out more, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click the Love with Food banner. And do it right now.
Get high-quality glasses, sunglasses, and prescription lenses at eyeglasses.com. Choose from over 250,000 items and 400 brands. Already have frames? Get replacement lenses. It's easy. Go to our advertiser page and click eyeglasses.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
It's Powell to the People.
Welcome back. You're listening to Powell to the People. Wayne Powell here at the beach, and we have our special guest, Hermosa Beach Mayor Dean Francois. Well, I don't know if it still says it in your city council chambers at City Hall, but I remember it always said the best little beach city, you know, that being Hermosa Beach. And I always wanted to say, well, Manhattan Beach is the best slightly larger beach city.
Oh yeah, we're the little ones.
It's about 1.4 square miles.
Yeah, so you can't get much littler than that, you know.
But any city that is on the beach is a great city in my book. Well, I want to talk to you about one of your roles, and that is, you know, on the governing board at the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission. And talk about what you do and some of your accomplishments.
Yeah, I'm glad to represent the South Bay cities on that. It's a mixture of elected officials and then appointed officials from different agencies and environmental groups. And it's quite a mix and hard to really get things done. And, you know, we basically are told with the responsibility of implementing programs and coordinating them with other agencies to ensure that we maintain the health of our bay and restore it every way we can. And one of the prime things that sits in the middle of this is the Bayona wetlands. And so, you know, the wetlands has gone through quite a history. It was Howard Hughes's land. And when he died, he owed so much money in taxes that luckily the government was able to get a hold of it, state and federal. And because of that, luckily they didn't go and sell it and rezone it or something. And so we were able to at least save about half of it. You know, many activists were out there trying to save the whole thing, but some of it got developed in the eastern sections, which weren't as wet as wetlands were. But you know, it's a large wetlands of the only place for migrating birds to stop along the coast in our area, and it's been 20 plus years where they've never been able to really restore it. A lot of wetlands they restore right away and it can work. You know, they just excavate the whole thing, but now there's so many endangered species or just regular animals, as well as plants, birds, the whole shebang that have kind of migrated and picked up that area, and it's in this state of, do we ever really want to restore it, and where are they going to come up with the billions of dollars to do it, which the federal government would have to. It's under their jurisdiction, state and federal. So in the meantime, it's been stagnant. We haven't been able to do any restoration. So I've been pushing our commission to come up with some new procedures and policies to allow environmentalists to go in there and by hand pull all the, you know, ice plant and all the other types of non-native plant life and try to get it restored and rejuvenated as best we can. And so that's basically the lead that I've been kind of taken on with that commission and bringing it wholesome into something that can work out for the betterment of everyone. And it's involved a lot of political pulls because there's a lot of money and establishments and bureaucratic forces that are behind this major restoration. So it's hard to say. It's just, do we bulldoze the whole thing and start over, or do we just restore it the way it is and just make little tweaks to it? And I guess that's that balance that's kind of happening in the dynamic of the Bayona wetlands.
And I know that a number of years ago when I was on the L.A. County Beach Commission, which has nothing to do with, you know, that area, but a developer came to our meeting, our commission meeting, and he was asking how he can get in touch with people to develop the wetlands, because he says that's a wasted space and it could be more commercially desirable, and you know, we could, you know, bring in lots of money for the city and the county. And they told him, you know, city staff told him, they'd meet with him after the meeting, And I think they just said after the meeting, go away.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, we have laws that protect wetlands, and we're able to use those environmental laws we have in a Coastal Act and Coastal Commission here in California that, you know, it's great to see those that wetland survive through all this. It's just, it's truly wonderful to just see it, enjoy it, to see the wildlife through there. It's really a thrill and something we should be proud of, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, shifting gears and going to a broader nationwide item, but as I said in your bio at the beginning of the show, you were a former intern at the office of the Speaker of the U.S. Capitol, Washington, D.C. What was that like?
Well, it was interesting. I was in college, and that was Tip O'Neill. That was quite a while ago. I was lucky to have a tiny little desk right in the Capitol. Most interns are off on the state, on the legislative buildings on the side, but I was right there in the legal office of the Speaker, and I would see all the committee heads coming in and out, and I'd hear them talk about it. It was quite an experience to have. And I did that along with a cooperative education program that was involved in Washington, D.C. So I was actually had two jobs at the same time that I took on. But it was a thrill. I knew I didn't ever really want to live in Washington, D.C., but it was a thrill to be part of that power in the legislative process. And I'll tell you, when I saw that Capitol get stormed, I mean, the room where my desk was in was really on television, and I could see that, and wow, that hit me like something else, you know. It wakes you up to, I guess, a call to service or do something, and, you know, something needs to be done to get more sensible things in our government so that things like that don't ever happen again. So,
well,
it kind of hit me. But
you mentioned Tip O'Neill, and that was at a time when both sides of the aisle, the Democrats and the Republicans, worked together, and they would achieve reasonable compromises that would benefit, you know, their constituents. However, it seems like nowadays both sides of the aisle are always bickering, and they seem to maybe forgot who they represent, and sometimes nothing gets done.
Well, it's funny, even back then, when I was working there, people would say the same thing. It's all in the perspective. They say, oh, you guys used to work together back when Eisenhower was, you know, you hear all this, and now we're not. It's like, so it's just, the dynamic is so different, but the interesting thing in that one was that you did have a Democratic Speaker of the House who was closely attuned with the president, and they did get along, and you didn't see this fighting going on, and part of it was because the Speaker of the House didn't necessarily like Jimmy Carter when Jimmy Carter was president. And so there was always that rift going on. I was there when Jimmy Carter was president. It always bothered me to see that they always had a problem because Jimmy Carter was kind of an outsider. You had this outsider coming in as president trying to reform things, and the insiders didn't like it. So it's an interesting dynamic that you always see, but you know, you always see some compromise somewhere and some people working together somewhere behind the scenes. But, boy, it is really divisive right now in this climate we have today. And I think it affects down to the local level, just, you know, in the types of meetings we have and the type of, I don't know, back and forth that people have. It gets really bitter. And, you know, we're trying our best to calm that down at our meetings and try to get everyone to work together locally, because I think it can be done and it should be, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, by state law, local governments are supposed to be nonpartisan, or at least in theory, that's the way. But in practice, there's other types of politics, you know, local politics, but not partisan politics. But I remember my first term on council, I had one person that would insist on, you know, partisan politics. And then when I was mayor, and when someone came to the podium and they wanted to talk about issues that were within the subject matter jurisdiction of, you know, the council, but they were making it, you know, a partisan political issue.
I mean, I know you got a break coming up, but I really think that that the division we have isn't partisan. There are Republicans, Democrats are on one side, Republican Democrats are on the other. So it really isn't, it doesn't really directly relate to the parties. It's interesting. We have division here that it isn't Democrat-Republican. It's just division over local issues. So, but it still stemmed down to that whole thing and created this divisiveness, you know.
It's true. Hold that thought, because I want to continue the discussion, but first we're going to take a commercial break. We're listening to Powell to the People on the Healthy Life Radio Network.
It's Power to the People.
Shh! Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
If you're in Southern California, you might want to consider HealthyLife.net Radio for advertising. We have 18 hosts that have shows with loyal listeners just in Southern California. That means you get local advertising and the world for the same affordable price. With packages for every budget, you can't afford not to let that economic sun shine in for your business. Call now 1-800-555-5453. That's 1-800-555-5453.
When you need quality Auto Parts Warehouse is fast and easy. Always get the part that fits. Just enter your vehicle type to find the parts specific to your car. Auto body parts, mirrors, brakes, suspension and steering, engines and drivetrains. Need something yet? What about exterior and interior accessories or headlights? Auto Parts Warehouse has them. Top brands, great prices. Visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Auto Parts Warehouse.
Everybody down! Dwayne Johnson here. The earthquakes you see in movies are one thing, but real life is a completely different animal. Just because you can't predict an earthquake doesn't mean that you can't prepare for one. In the event of a real earthquake, you should drop, cover, and hold on. Visit ready.gov/earthquake and practice what to do to keep you and your family safe in the event of a real earthquake, and you'll be seen as a hero by your family and your loved ones.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
It's Power to the People.
Welcome back. You're listening to Powell to the People. Wayne Powell here at the beach, and we have Hermosa Beach Mayor Dean Francois. Well, continuing along the lines of, you know, sort of partisan politics. There's actually two levels of politics that go on in municipal government. The first is just, you know, local issues. Some people want some things, other people don't want it. And then you have some people that maybe don't agree with a certain elected representative. And, you know, those are the local politics. The other level, of course, is, you know, as I mentioned previously, both sides of the aisle, Democrats versus Republicans. And I once made the statement that I wish our elected Congress members and senators, maybe even president, that those races were nonpartisan. And that way people wouldn't be so, you know, bent on taking the party line, even if it was inimical to the best interests of the community. But, like Hermosa Beach, like Manhattan Beach, I'm sure, you know, you have people that either want something that the city can't afford or maybe is not in the best interest of the city, and then, you know, you have to kind of explain, you know, why it's not something that the city council wants. Did we lose Dean?
What happened? Did I hit the mute button by mistake? Are you there?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say you have to deal on a frequent basis, I'm sure, with the naysayers that come to council meetings, and what they either want or don't want is not really in the best interests of the city.
Yeah, it's always a hard thing to deal with. Many times people want a lot from their government, but they don't want to pay for it. And that's always a hard hard thing to deal with. They say, well, I don't want government doing this and doing that and doing that, and then suddenly they want government to do something that they want. And, you know, how do you balance it all? Many times I'm kind of a straight shooter when it comes to people, and I go, well, you want limited government. You don't want it to be big. You don't want a large bureaucracy, but yet you want all these things for us to do. So it's a hard balance, you know. It's a hard one, hard to tackle. I was against the sales tax increase, and it didn't fly. And, you know, some people were for it. Some people were against it. I thought the city could survive without having it. And now we have one of the lowest sales taxes of all the communities around here. And hopefully that means more people will shop and spend their money right here in Hermosa Beach, where they're paying a little bit less of a tax. So it's just one of those byproducts of people want things, don't want to pay, yeah.
Just like in Hermosa Beach and Manhattan Beach and, of course, even Redondo Beach, you know, we always say buy local, shop local, dine local, because the sales tax revenue goes not directly, but a good portion of it, you know, goes to the city. But, you know, people will make requests like, we want 3 new Olympic-sized swimming pools. And then when you ask the person, well, how do you suppose we're going to pay for it? And then they'll say, oh, well, Manhattan Beach or even Hermosa Beach, you know, they're affluent communities. I'm sure you can come up with the money or just raise taxes or do something, you know, to get the money.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic. The sales tax increase just passed in Manhattan Beach.
Yes.
When it failed in Hermosa. So, you know, it makes you wonder why. Is there a big difference between Manhattan and Hermosa? And I guess there is. You have a more upscale community where people are not maybe embellished in all the municipal problems as much, and they feel more complacent that things are doing fine, and the residents just assume pay more for the sales tax. And I don't know. And maybe in Hermosa we thought, well, there's a lot of people that come from out of town, and people scringe their money together to come here and pay to go out to eat. And, you know, why should we be affecting those people anymore with increases in taxes? So,
well,
yeah, it's an interesting dynamic.
The city of Manhattan Beach had a kind of a clever, maybe some people said slick marketing campaign, where they said, it really doesn't cost you that much. It's all the people that come to Manhattan Beach, you know, the tourists, and they spend money, and they're the ones that are paying for it. But if you eat locally in Manhattan Beach, or you shop locally in Manhattan Beach, or if you want to buy a car at Manhattan Beach Toyota, you're going to pay the sales tax. And,
yeah.
You know, it's not entirely paid by, and I don't know what the percentage is, how much of it's raised from, you know, visitors versus residents, but it worked, and they passed it.
Well, yeah, I mean, our study showed it was about half and half, and there was a good campaign against the sales tax. I was a council member against it. Most of the council members were for it at the time. And they counteracted well with their arguments. Only half of it is generated from people outside the city, so therefore half of it's generated from people inside the city, people that are residents and voters here. And the DMV and the sales tax on your car, people who didn't realize that it doesn't matter where you buy the car, whether it's Hawthorne, Torrance, or here, you're paying the sales tax of where you live, so it automatically, your fees on your car go up if it's raised in your city where you live. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, I always see the results of who the largest sales tax generators are in Manhattan Beach, and, of course, Manhattan Beach Toyota, because it's a big-ticket item when you buy a car. Also, the Target store, and then there's a number of others. And so But I know our residents frequently, you know, shop at Target. They frequently, you know, eat at the restaurants in downtown, and you're going to be paying a sales tax on that.
Yeah, I've always wondered how suspicious those numbers are when it comes to sales tax revenue from car dealerships, because you're paying the sales tax for where you live. So someone that lives in Torrance and buys a car in Manhattan, they're paying the sales taxes going to Torrance. So it's just strange, and I always question those numbers, but I don't know. It's here nor there now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, we have to take a commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Powell to the People on the Healthy Life Radio Network.
It's Power to the People.
Millions of Americans are without access to dental benefits, especially because of the high market demand for quality and affordable dental care in America. Now here comes DentalPlans.com. It's the leading online resource for discount dental plans and an alternative to dental insurance for families and individuals. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on DentalPlans.com now and find your affordable dental care in America.
Okay, so you have a couple of days off, and you're planning to get away from stress. You may be planning to go across the world or even taking a staycation around town. Well, Hotels.com can get you a room in over 158,000 hotels, 60 countries, for 50% off. That's reducing stress already. Plus, collect 10 nights, and you'll get one night free. And there's no cancellation charges, no change fees. For the best deals, even last-minute deals, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Hotels.com.
Stuff, stuff, stuff. Where can I contain all of my stuff? How about this? The Container Store, the original storage and organization store. And I found their link on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. They have containers for everything, including the kitchen, the bathroom, trash and recycling, traveling, spring cleaning, and dorm rooms. Just about everything you can think of to contain your stuff. The Container Store, right on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
I'm Carol King. The opportunity to study music is one of the most valuable things we can give our young people. Music is a positive outlet for creative expression. It reinforces teamwork, communication, self-discipline, and focus, all skills that will benefit them in every aspect of their lives. If your school has a music program, encourage your child to use it. If it doesn't, work with others in your community and do whatever it takes to get one. I know how much my music programs and music teachers meant to me when I was growing up. Leave your kids a note for the future. Support music programs and music teachers in your school and community.
A public service announcement brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
It's Powell to the People.
Welcome back. You're listening to Powell to the People. Wayne Powell here at the beach, and we have Hermosa Beach, I almost said Manhattan Beach, Hermosa Beach Council Member, Hermosa Beach Mayor, Dean Francois. Well, I want to talk about the lighter side of things that you've done or do. First of all, you worked at the radio station KCRW in Santa Monica. How was that like?
Well, that was a thrill, probably the most satisfactory job I had as far as, it was just a thrill. It was something I always wanted to do when I was a little kid. I wanted to be a DJ. So I was a radio listener and wanted to be a DJ with the top hits, and went off to college and got a career instead. And when I left the government, I started volunteering at, or I even volunteered before, with public radio. I love public radio, and then they brought me in, and I was a substitute announcer and did the news. I wasn't advanced to become a DJ, so I did the news, and it was a thrill to do that. I worked on their fundraisers and do a lot for public radio. It's a great institution, and it's a good thing we have it, and L.A. has got one of the best. We are blessed with some of the best public radio stations in the country. It's amazing what we have as far as good quality radio, public radio programming.
And so, you did the news, just the news, and nothing but the news.
Well, it's the local news. I got to write and say my own weather and my own news. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
I'd pull up the headlines and write. It was a local news between the breaks of national. It was Morning Edition, the early morning news. So, you know, I would just do the local news and write it up. And back then, it was one announcer that did everything. Now they have three doing it. So.
Yeah, and then, you know, lately it seems like, depending on, you know, well, the news outlet, whether it's broadcast radio or television, they all seem to either be leaning left or leaning right. And it used to be they would separate commentary and label it as such, you know, from the news. But now it's like you don't know when someone's delivering the news.
No. Nope.
What is there? How much opinion is factored into that?
Yeah, you sure don't. The style of news has changed quite a bit. Yeah.
Well, one other thing you've done, actually, I think you still do, is you're a ski instructor at Mammoth Mountain.
Yeah, I'm a volunteer instructor for the handicapped and disabled sports and disabled skiers, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, putting someone that's disabled, but it is a thrill to see someone come out of a wheelchair and get on a bi-ski or a mono-ski, and they're going down the mountain unassisted with tethers on each side of their arms. You know, it's a thrill to see that.
I've seen skiers that, like one of them was an amputee, they lost their leg, and they were skiing, and then there was like a mini-ski on the pole. That, you know, on the side,
yeah,
where they lost
right,
their
leg. Right, that's a tether, yeah. They'll have a tether on both. If both of their arms are strong enough, and many people in wheelchairs are, their upper body is very strong, and they've got a tether on each side to balance them as they make their turns on a mono ski straight down the mountain. And it just depends on the person. Others don't have that strength or agility, and so then we have to have, ropes and controls out. But either way, it takes like, you know, it takes three, four, a team of skiers to assist usually one person. On the rare exception, we do have a few that are self-sufficient and they can go with just one other assistant, you know.
So. And I once saw someone who was actually totally blind actually skiing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We have blind skiers. Yeah, it's really something. Yeah.
Well, so going back to municipal affairs, is there anything that we didn't cover or anything that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, I don't know. I think you've probably covered most of the main subjects here. You know, public safety is always something that we're all very greatly concerned about in our cities. And, you know, we have an extensive police force. I think that they do a good job of keeping our city safe. And there's a lot of things behind the scenes that people don't see. And, of course, we always have complaints about e-bikes and, you know, on the Strand, people just see them. But, we're trying our best to crack down them. We've increased fines on them. And hopefully that puts something into the teeth. And once in a while we do get a bunch of them, you know, these tricksters and people that are just out there raising havoc and causing basically terror in our community sometimes, these gangs of people on e-bikes. And so, you know, we're going out there, and we've done a lot for homeless support services through our mobile mental health pilot programs that we put together. The police have this advanced technology now, this real-time information in the field, which they're able to equip our officers with a lot of advanced technology. We recently were able to implement that. And those things have really added to making our community better and safer, and just trying to preserve the little beach city as we see it, keep this small town atmosphere, I think, is so important, and to keep our, it's just part of our community and who we are, and hopefully, you know, we can continue and do that. And then, of course, we did have the fires coming up. It was great to see all the wonderful people come together and help out those people in need, when the fires and disasters were going on, and setting up programs to help them. And I worked for the American Red Cross, so I did that kind of work, and I've been there firsthand to see what people do experience when they lose their homes, and it's just, it's great to see that community spirit, and I'm proud to be the mayor of this little city.
Yeah, and it's nice that all of the beach cities, Hermosa, Redondo, Manhattan, you know, they've opened up their homes to, you know, the victims of the wildfires. I just can't believe what it would be like to lose your home, everything in your home, including keepsakes, and just where would you go about first start to go about restoring your life and, you know, getting back to, well, you never get back to usual, but...
Oh, and I did want to mention, I've formed a subcommittee of council members to kind of go after the red tape that people have complained about in getting things done at City Hall, the permitting processes, rezoning, how do we tackle our zoning so that we can really strengthen it and tighten it up so that it isn't so bureaucratic, so we don't have these complaints that it takes forever for businesses to get things done and permits approved, and residents as well, you know, this permit approval process. We're trying to streamline and work on that. Hopefully, you know, nothing goes without controversy, but it's a testament. It's interesting. You can have any two council members work on something on their own and come to back to the city body as a whole with their recommendations, and that's a great way to utilize a tool that doesn't get utilized much. Instead of having this formalized process, we can put that tool together and really make things work. And I'm hoping that something comes out of it, and we'll see how it goes. But it's in the hands of two council members right now, and it's at the subcommittee level. So,
yeah, well, I agree. I hope it all works out. Well, again, you've done great things on council, and now as mayor. I know your residents, your constituents, are well served. And on that note, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my listeners for listening to Powell to the People. And always remember, power is the ability to do good things for others and to make your community and the world a better place. This is Wayne Powell sending you positive thoughts and good wishes. Stay safe, be well, and have a great week. We'll see you back next Monday. Until then, bye for now.
Goodbye, everybody.
Powell. It's Powell to the People. You're listening to Wayne Powell on Powell to the People. It's Powell, Powell to the People. You're listening to Wayne Powell on Powell to the People.